back and forth several times this morning on whether or not to proceed with our sermon from the story or to change gears with news about Mickey. And I really hadn't decided until a few minutes ago, and then I imagined Mickey looking at me, and the idea of us changing gears for him, he would have been horrified by that. He would, oh, don't do that. Don't do that. And so I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stick with the sermon that was planned for today. And also, I was learning about Mickey what many of you who've known him a long time knew, and that is that every once in a while you would get a peek behind the curtain and you would see that he had this hilarious side to him that would tell jokes and stories and really ham things up. And it's almost like if you saw a little bit too much of that, he would pull the curtain back and be like, oh, I'm sorry you had to see that. And so in that spirit, I want to begin, and I hope you don't mind, and I hope it's not inappropriate. I'm going to do a magic trick. I hope that's okay. Before we do that, I do want to invite you to turn in your Bibles to Luke 8. We'll be there in a moment, and then we'll talk about multiple dimensions this morning, and then we'll go to Matthew 14, and then John 6, and then I'm going to tell you about the atheist on the beach. So that'll all make sense when we're done. I'm going to call a volunteer out of the audience, and I'm going to choose Lance Hendricks. Lance, if you would come up to the front to help me with this trick. Come on up. Everybody give Lance a hand. Yes. Got a card trick. He hasn't done anything yet. Yeah. You just are who you are, so okay. They're clapping. Open that deck of cards, and I want you to, you can look at the cards, you can make sure there's nothing tricky going on there, and I'll turn this way, you can do whatever you want. Now I want you to pick a card, you can look at them, pick a card, and when you've picked a card, I want you to show it to everybody else. And nobody tell me what it is. Okay, I'm over here. All right, show everybody what it is. Got it? You guys are going to have to keep him honest. Okay, now this is what I want you to do. I'm not looking, but I'm going to hand you this Sharpie. What I want you to do is I want you to write your name, your first name, and your date of birth on the card in Sharpie. On the side of the, not the, you know what I'm saying. The playing card side. It's taking you a really long time to write. Okay. All right. Now, bring me the card face down.
You just want the one card?
Just the one card. You can hand me the rest of the deck too. Okay. I'm going to set these here. Same card. He didn't do anything tricky over there.
No.
And you signed it?
Yeah.
Okay. Now watch this. All right.
That's
it's a little awkward. And now I'd like for, Becky's in here. Becky, will you check in your purse and see if there's anything in there that doesn't belong? A deck of cards. Ooh, how interesting. Would you open the deck of cards? Did you see the card that Lance picked? Okay, what card was it? Now since it's been destroyed and consumed by my shirt. The Two of Hearts. Okay, we scroll and flip through there and find the Two of Hearts. And stand up and show it to everybody. No way. Let me see that card. It says, no, you read what it says.
Stop.
That's not what it says. It says,
no, it's
it says Lance 81067. Is that your handwriting? That's not my handwriting, is it?
That's my handwriting.
It's a miracle. It's magic.
Yeah.
Brilliant. No applause. I get nothing. I get nothing. Thank you. Thank you. You can keep that. That's for you. You can frame that. I'm a little surprised that you weren't amazed by my magic trick. Now, no one's amazed. We're not amazed by very much these days, are we? If I were to do something truly amazing, let's just say that I began to levitate on the stage. I'm not going to. I've tried. And not just a little bit, but like for 15 seconds, like 4 feet above the ground. Your first response would be what? It's got to be a trick. It's not real. It's an illusion. It is some sort of theatrical stunt. It's not really happening. We, in the Western world, in the modern world, we have a precondition to demystify what we see and what we hear. We're used to it. We're used to people trying to trick us, to try to pull the wool over our eyes. We're used to people trying to do tricky things. We're used to entertainers and being entertained. We go to movies with special effects and everything just looks so real that we are conditioned, when we see something amazing, to assume that it's manufactured, that it's a trick. And for most of us, if we're being honest, we're not really amazed by anything anymore, are we? It takes going somewhere very different. Maybe for those of you who have gone and seen the Northern Lights, or for those of you who have stood on a mountaintop, and to see something that you never get to see and might never get to see again that takes your breath away, it takes something like that to take our breath away, to be amazed. And this is why I say all of that this morning, and it's because when Jesus did the things that he did and said the things that he said, the scriptures tell us that the people were amazed. They were astonished. They were blown away. They were confused. They were afraid. They didn't know what to think. It caused them to cry out and to ask questions. People were amazed. And I wonder, are these just stories to us? Or do we hear these stories about Jesus? And are you amazed? Let's look at Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 22. One day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." Fear, astonishment, wonder. This is how people respond to Jesus. This man is unlike any other man. If we've lost our sense of wonder and amazement at who Jesus is and what he says and does, then we can be fairly certain that we've allowed our worldview and our experience of him to be tamed and simplified to fit into the way we see the world. In other words, maybe the way that we've always thought about Jesus and the way we've always understood him leads us to no longer be amazed. And I wonder what it would be like if many of us could go back and hear these stories again for the first time. It's difficult to even imagine. Or even more amazing, what would it have been like to have been there and to have been one of the first witnesses to these events? Would you have been amazed, terrified, excited, exhilarated, confused? Part of the problem is that we hear these stories and we do everything we can to explain it away, and it's like our system can't even process all that Jesus is. It's almost like he's from another dimension. There's a book called Flatland that was written in the 19th century by a man named Edwin Abbott. And it's a story about characters that live in a two-dimensional flat world, like on a piece of paper. So let's do a little bit of dimensions review, if you don't mind. One dimension would be a line, right? That's one-dimensional, okay? If we were to add a dimension, so this goes left or right, correct? Or whichever direction it's going. It can't go any other direction. But then you add a second dimension, and what do you have? You don't just have width, you also have height, correct? So in a two-dimensional world, you could have a square. You could have width and height at the same time. Well, what happens when you get to the third dimension? We are three-dimensional beings, right? Three dimensions, an example would be a sphere. I'm pretty proud of that PowerPoint sphere. What would it be like if you, like the characters in Flatland, lived in a two-dimensional reality, like on a sheet of paper? Imagine yourself as a stick figure in Flatland. You can go left and right, up and down, but not forwards and backwards. How would you experience something that is three-dimensional? What would it look like to you? Let's imagine, if you can, that this sphere, that a ball were to come right through the surface of Flatland, of your two-dimensional reality. What would that look like? Well, at first, it would look like a tiny dot, the spot where it first touches your reality, because it's just the edge of the sphere that would touch. And then as it passes through, the dot would expand into a circle, into ever greater circles, until then it would start to shrink back again and turn into a dot as it finishes passing through our dimension. That's what it would be like if a ball, if a three-dimensional ball came through your two-dimensional flat land. So I want you to imagine the people in Flatland and a ball, a sphere, a three-dimensional object comes through their world. What would they say? Imagine this conversation. Here you and your friend are, two dimensions. A sphere comes through. You see the dot, the circles, the expanding circles, and then the retracting circles and the dot again. And you say to each other, did you see that? Yeah, that was bizarre. Did you see those circles? Yeah, I saw the circles. That was crazy. I don't know. And maybe one of you says, I think maybe it was more than circles. I don't know, it felt like there was something greater to what was going on. It wasn't just circles. I feel like maybe it was like a ball. And the other one says, a ball? Don't be ridiculous. There's no such thing as a ball. Have you ever seen a ball? Well, no, I haven't seen a ball. Then how do you know it was a ball? Well, I don't know. Well, do you have any evidence or proof that it was a ball? Well, no, I can't really prove it. I just sort of have this feeling that that a sphere above, a three-dimensional object came through. I know how crazy that sounds. I can't prove it. I don't have any evidence. But I just know, I know that I experienced it. It was something more than circles. Two different responses to living in flatland. When something greater comes into flatland, the first response is to say, it's not a big deal. Everything is explainable. There's no reason to wonder, nothing to impress, nothing that amazes. Been there, done that. All it was circles and nothing more. You can't prove that it was anything else. We have the evidence. It was a dot and then it was some circles and then it was gone. It's crazy talk to talk about it being a ball. And then there's the second response. The second response says, no, it was a ball. The ball came into our midst and we felt its presence. And it was real. And it was like it was from another dimension. And it was like for a moment that the ball was with us. I know this is ridiculous. The first kind of person sounds rational, but they're actually missing out on the truth. What's the truth? That something from another dimension actually did come into their midst, and that there's a whole new reality breaking into our midst right now. The first kind of person says, that's ridiculous. You have no proof. You can't prove it. It's just circles. But some of us experience and realize what it is, that there's something else, something deeper and greater going on here, something more, something that's beyond us, but that is here with us, something or someone. Think about these stories about Jesus. Some hear these accounts of the things that he did, the miracles that he did, the things that he taught, and they come up with a whole list of reasons why we can't read it literally. It didn't really happen. It's just metaphor. That kind of thing doesn't happen in the world. Or maybe we've heard these stories and they've just lost their power. And we say, well, they're just stories. But others hear these stories, and in these stories we experience wonder that Jesus isn't like any other man. And we ask, as the disciples did, who is this? If you're living in flatland, and all you know is flatland, and something from a third dimension comes into flatland, you have a choice to be open to the more that has just come into your midst, or to explain it away. And I wonder how many human beings right now today in the 21st century live in flatland. Let's go to Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 27. This story is familiar to many of you. It's another time that there's a storm and a boat involved. Jesus sends his apostles, his disciples, across the lake, and he's going to go up and pray. And during the night, he looks out onto the lake and sees that they're struggling against a storm and that they're struggling to make progress. And so Jesus goes and walks on the water to his disciples. And it says that when they see him, they thought that he was a ghost and they cried out in terror. And so in verse 27, Jesus says, but Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat. He walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You have little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. In the ancient world, people had a worldview of how things ranked. So depending on what kind of being or creature or thing or object you were, you had a ranking order in the cosmos. And so we start with human beings because that's our experience. And so the apostles, the disciples, everyone in the ancient world would have seen the world this way. You've got human beings, and underneath human beings are greater than animals, and so animals are lower than human beings. And then you've got things like plants, and then you've got rocks and dust. But then there are things that are greater than human beings out there in the world and in the universe. Like you have forces of nature like earthquakes and storms and wind and fire. And then greater even than forces of nature, you have spiritual forces like angels and demons and principalities and powers. And then of course, higher than spiritual forces, they would have had God at the top. And so when Jesus comes walking across the water to their boat, and when Jesus calms a storm, it shows that he has command and dominion over the forces of nature, which puts him somewhere above human, somewhere above forces of nature, and would cause the people who had seen this kind of thing happen to ask the question, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? Who is this? Two of the Gospels have immediately after this story of Jesus walking on the water, they go to the land of the Gerasenes, and there's a man there possessed by a legion of demons. And Jesus casts out the demons and has authority over them, which would have led them to say, well, if he has authority over spiritual forces, then that can only mean one thing. That at the least, this man, this one who there is no one else like him, that he is at least sent by God and has power over the forces of the spirit and over the forces of nature and over all human beings, and maybe even greater than that, maybe God is in our midst. Did you notice what happened when Jesus gets into the boat? What do? They worship him. Why do they worship him? Because they recognize that this is no ordinary man. And they are amazed. And we would be too. But thinking about everything we just talked about with Flatland and about this story, I want to focus on Peter for a moment. Peter asks Jesus to walk on the water. He sees the possibility of a reality beyond everything that he's already known, and he knows that there's something deeper going on here, something that is more than what he thought possible. And so he sees in Jesus someone more amazing and wondrous than any human that ever lived, and his response to that was, me too. Jesus, call me out on the water, and I want to come to you. Jesus, call me. I want to be in. Jesus, whatever it is you are about, whoever it is that you are, whatever is really going on here, I see something more in you, something greater, something maybe even from another dimension, from another world. I see something powerful in you. And Peter says, I want in on that. I want to follow you. I want to join you. Teach me, show me, call me to come out onto the water to you. And Jesus tells him to come. Jesus comes to show us a new reality, a new world, a new kind of kingdom in which peace and love and justice and mercy and compassion and forgiveness for our enemies and people who aren't like us is possible, and those things win the day at the end of it all. And most people in his day couldn't accept it. They couldn't even hear it without getting angry. Jesus taught in parables so that those who had eyes to see and ears to hear would see what Jesus was really doing and would see the kind of world that Jesus imagines. And so it captivated them so much that people were willing to leave everything behind. Jesus tells a parable about a man who finds a treasure buried in the field. And what does he do? He doesn't say, oh, that's just amazing that there's a treasure in a field. But tomorrow's Monday. I'm going to work. What does he do? He sells everything that he has, all of his possessions so that he can go and he can buy that field, knowing that he's taken hold of a deeper treasure than anyone's aware of. He sees a glimpse of something more. This is what Peter sees when he's in that boat and he sees Jesus walking on the water. Impossible? What seems impossible to us, that someone could walk on water? Is it so impossible that someone could walk on water, or is it even more impossible that we could forgive and love our enemies? Peter sees Jesus, and he gets a glimpse beyond flatland. The sphere comes through into the two-dimensional world. And he says, I want to come onto the water too. I want to go to that other place with Jesus. And then I know you can't hear this again for the first time, but I want you to imagine that you're in that boat. Peter calls out, Jesus, I want to come to you. And Jesus says, come on. And Peter climbs out of the boat and he walks on the water. I have to imagine that at least one of the disciples thought, I wish I had taken a bathroom break before this happened. I just imagine they could not even process what they are seeing. And I wonder if any of the rest of them had a fleeting moment of thinking, I want to go too. I'm next. I want to be the next one to walk on the water. But before we know it, Peter gets sucked back into his worldview and he sees the winds and the waves and he's terrified. He gets drawn back into flat land, all that he can understand and see, and he begins to sink. And we focus on the sinking part. That, oh yeah, he tried and it went okay, but he doubted, and so, you know, it was a nice try. But why don't we focus on the fact that he walked on the water? The next time you're at a swimming pool, I want you to get a running start. I know you're not supposed to run at the pool. I want you to get a running start and run toward the edge of the pool and then just keep running and see how far you get. And I want you to have someone on the side time you to see how far you get, how many steps you take before you go down to the water. And when you do that, I want you to remember this moment and this story and realize Peter walked on water. He got out of the boat because Jesus had showed him a glimpse of something more. And Peter said, yes. Which is why years later, Peter would stand up against the rulers and authorities of his day, and he would lay down his life for the mission of God in the world, and he would be crucified upside down on a Roman cross because he had seen and experienced something beyond flatland, and he had seen the new kind of world that Jesus envisions, and he had seen the resurrected Christ, and he had said, yes. And so now I want to wrap up with another story that was in our reading for today from the story. And hey, a quick commercial for the story. If you've dropped off and you hadn't been reading, just pick it back up. No judgment here. Just pick up with the next chapter. We'll be in chapter 25 next week. Join us. And this story from this last week that has the feeding of the 5,000. We're familiar with this story. If you've spent any time in church, you've heard this story where Jesus comes and there's these crowds and it says that he feeds 5,000 men. And we can assume that there were also women and children there. And so it's possible that there were 15, maybe even 20,000 people that Jesus feeds with just the little sack lunch of a little boy who had 5 loaves and 2 fish. And how far can that go among so many people? And yet Jesus takes it, blesses it, breaks it, and gives it, and everyone has more than enough to eat, and there's 12 baskets left over. Jesus shows once more that there's more. More food than you can eat. More mystery than you can handle. More love than you can fathom. More grace than we can handle. There's more room. And so, he feeds these people and everything's going great. Now there are tens of thousands of people following Jesus. And we get to John chapter 6. And in John chapter 6, Jesus takes this multitude of people and he does a reverse megachurch movement. He figures out how to shrink this humongous crowd down to just a tiny few. Don't go to Jesus for church growth strategies. He gathers all these people together. They say, we want more food to eat. And then he tells the crowd that if they're really ready to follow him, if they really want to be full, if they really want to follow God on this adventure toward this new kind of kingdom, this new kind of world, this new creation, then they need to fully embrace who he is and who he was, and that they would need to be fully open themselves to what God wants to do in them and through them. And Jesus gives them this invitation using a metaphor. He says that it's not just physical bread that he gives, but he also gives his body. He says, if you really want to have any part of me, you have to not just eat this bread that I've given to you, that I've multiplied. You have to not just eat this bread. You have to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And what he's saying is that there's no halfway about this. You've got to open yourself completely to this new reality that God is up to in the world and open yourself up to it. And if you're looking for more, you won't find it until you completely open yourself to what God is doing. You've got to take in all of me. And so what was their response? Many of them said, this is a difficult teaching, and turned away and no longer followed him. Thousands of people returned to Flatland because it's so uncomfortable sometimes to get a glimpse of what God's inviting us to, that we go back to what's comfortable and familiar. And so we have before us today two responses: to taste and see and hear that Jesus is good, but then to explain it away or to allow it to become commonplace. And when we do that, we continue to live in flatland. And that's a temptation that a lot of us have in the church. We see that Jesus is good, we know all the stories, and we just show up and we do our thing and we just let it be common and we lose our wonder. But then there's this other response. It's the response that Peter had in the boat. It's to say, I'm in. I'm amazed by Jesus. I believe that his kingdom has come, and I want to seek that kingdom first and give my life away. And if that's our response, then Jesus invites us to leave Flatland and to follow him into a new world. And he says in John 6:35, Jesus declared, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. In other words, there's more. This is no ordinary man. This is no ordinary kingdom. Are you hungry? Are you thirsty? If you're hungry, then come and feast on the bread of life and open your life to Jesus, the bread. Are you thirsty? He says, come and drink and you will never be thirsty again. Come to the fountain. Are you ready to step into a greater reality? Then get out of the boat of what you know and what you expect and what you already understand and follow Jesus into the great mystery. Because this Jesus is no ordinary man. There's a man named Mike McHargue, he's known as Science Mike. He grew up in a Christian home and grew up in a Southern Baptist church. And as an adult, he lost his faith and he became a full atheist. He's a scientist, and so he began to ask questions about the Bible and about science and about how those things work and how they don't work. And he started to notice things in the Bible that seemed like inconsistencies to him. And he walked away. His faith crumbled. He said it was like a trap door in the universe just opened up beneath him, and there was nothing below. No God, no hope, no meaning. He began to read everything he could on humanism and new atheism and Dawkins and all of those folks, and he read their materials, and he just went full speed into this new life and left everything else behind. Until he was invited for work to come be part of a conference for some ministers, and he went. And while he was there, he claims that he heard the voice of Jesus tell him, "I was there for you when you were 8 years old, and I'm still here now." And he said that it made him angry. And then all the ministers were invited to come up and to take communion together. And as he walked up, he had this feeling like, "I don't even believe in any of this." And as he received the bread and the cup and was told, "This is God's body, Christ's body broken for you. This is his blood shed for you." He took it and he walked out and he wept. He found himself out on the beach in Southern California under the stars, and he says he couldn't tell where the sky ended and where the Pacific Ocean began. It was just all dark. And this wrestling match for his soul ensued. And he started to speak to God for the first time in 2 years. And he tells about how he told God, "God, I don't have this all figured out. I don't even know that I still, even at this moment, believe that you're real. I don't know that I believe in the Bible. I don't know that I believe all the right things, but I do know this, that I met Jesus again tonight. And so, God, I'll make you a deal. You let me have my questions, and I will serve you with my life, and I will turn it all over to you. All I know is tonight I met Jesus again." And he said that where he was standing was several dozen yards above where the tide line had come to its furthest point. And he said that when he said in his mind that I met Jesus again tonight, that a rogue wave came all the way up to the top of the beach and drenched his sandy, dirty feet and legs up to his knees and washed all the dirt away. And in the morning, he thought that he had imagined it all and had some sort of delusion. And so he went back down to the beach to try to make sense of things, and he found the exact spot that he was standing in, and there was a perfect circle of seaweed in that spot. Even the wind and the waves obey Jesus. And if they can wash away the dirt and the sin and the doubts of a professed atheist like Mike Maharyu, then what might he do in our life today? Today, if you're amazed by Jesus and you've never stepped out of the boat, I want to invite you today to step out of the boat. The way that we understand that here, what God commands us to do, what it looks like for us to step out of the boat, is to actually come and to get in this water. And spoiler alert, you're not going to walk on top of the water, you're going to go underneath the water in a symbolic act where God meets us and our sins are washed away, and we symbolize the death and the burial and the resurrection of Jesus, and we're raised to walk in a newness of life. If you hear the story of Jesus and you're amazed, and you feel a sense of wonder and awe, then ask him, "Jesus, call to me and let me come to you on the water." And he'll say, "Come." Or maybe you've lost your sense of wonder and today you want to take hold of that truth again and be amazed by Jesus. I think that's a lot of us in here, that we just need to be amazed again by the one who healed a bleeding woman and raised a dead girl and who turned water into wine and who walked on water, and who fed 5,000 men and many more women and children, and who maybe in his greatest act other than his sacrificial death, who knelt down and washed his disciples' feet. The God of the universe kneels to serve and to die and to give. So come, all who are thirsty, and come and drink and be full. And may we put our hope and trust in him, especially on days like today, when we have nowhere else to turn. I love Peter's response at the end of John 6, when all the other people leave and Jesus turns to the disciples and says, "Are you going to leave too?" And Peter says, "Jesus, you have the words of life. Where else will we go? You have life."